During the Switch Pivot or Quit chat, we talked to women that have successfully navigated through some of the plot twist years of life and are eager to share their stories and what they've learned in the hopes of inspiring, teaching, or making even the slightest impact by candidly owning their truth. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch Pivot or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of the Switch Pivot or Quit podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes if you have enjoyed listening to this podcast so far. And check out switchpivotorquit.com for even more personal and professional development resources. But for now, just sit back, open your mind, and enjoy the show. On today's show, we're chatting with Elle Druin. She is the founder of Styled Stock Society and the human behind Moochie and the City. That is the Moochie and the City Instagram account. After several years of working as the director of marketing and digital strategy for e-commerce businesses, Elle launched her own business to focus on helping other women build brands that are as profitable as they are pretty. Elle currently runs the Styled Stock Society, a stylish stock photography membership for female entrepreneurs, as well as she works as a commercial photographer for beauty and lifestyle brands. Elle's dog, Moochie, is a 3-year-old Maltipoo model and influencer with over 100,000 followers. Elle and Moochie have been featured on Entrepreneur, Refinery 29, The Today Show, and a number of other media outlets. They've collaborated with brands like ABC, American Express, Disney, Google, and the Ritz-Carlton, and also use their platform to raise awareness for organizations like the Humane Society. Get ready for a great conversation because Elle is filled with a lot of good, valuable information regarding starting a business, transitioning, and just really the nitty-gritty of what it takes to sustain as a creative in business. Welcome to the show, Elle. I am super excited to have this conversation with you and all your beautifulness and the beautiful world that you live in.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Yay! So let's dive into your early years. What was your very first job? If you can think back and share what that job was and maybe what you remember that you were doing in that job.
So my first real job, I was my first actual job was in high school, and it was in the research lab of a hospital because my parents really wanted me to be a doctor. But I'm going to pretend that that didn't happen because honestly, it's irrelevant to the rest of my life other than I didn't become a doctor. So my first job out of college was actually as a financial advisor for a Swiss bank, which if you fast forward and know that I am currently a product stylist and photographer, you'll know that those things are totally unrelated.
Right. How did you end up sort of in that space? And was there anything appealing about that at all to you?
So I studied business in college. I was an international business and finance major. And one of the summers during college, I ended up with an internship at Merrill Lynch because I thought it would look good on my resume, to be honest.
Right.
And I ended up getting hired for a full-time position with the person that I interned with when I graduated, or when I was about to graduate. They offered me a full-time job and I took it because that meant I didn't have to look for a full-time job. So that is the reason I ended up in finance. I didn't start out thinking that I was studying business to specifically work in finance or even for anything related to banking or wealth management. I sort of just fell into it because it's what I had experience with my internship, and I didn't hate it. So
okay,
that was good at the time, or so I thought.
Right. So let's go ahead and jump in now to your switch, pivot, or quit experience, because as you know, we talk all about that on this podcast. So you just share a bit of your journey and sort of, I guess, obviously after that position, that company, you went on to do something else. How did you sort of get to the place where you're at now?
Yep. So my entire, I don't know, the last like decade of my life could basically be called switch, pivot, or quit. There's been a lot of twists and turns, but when I was working in finance, one of the things that I think a lot of people probably don't really know about being a financial advisor is your job, you think, is giving financial advice to people, but what it really is marketing and sales. You're marketing, you're trying to get new clients. You get paid two ways. One, to get new clients, literally have more people invest their money in whatever it is you're selling them. And the second part is the sales part, where you're literally selling them investments to actually put their money in. So while, yes, part of it is finance and economics and understanding a lot of complex math that, to be honest, no one actually has to do the math because computers do them.
Right.
Sales and marketing is sort of the heart of what that job was. And while I realized that I really loved sales and marketing, I wasn't super passionate about selling investments. And I also happened to be at a point in my career when the market had crashed and people were losing their jobs left and right. And, you know, banks were going from existing to not existing overnight.
Right.
And there was just a lot of stress involved with the position. And so I knew that I needed to do something for myself, for my sanity. And at the time, I needed a creative outlet because my job was so numbers and strategy based. So I started a blog. And that's kind of the thing that transitioned my life from working in finance to working in marketing, because as I started blogging, I built up an audience. I started working more and more with small brands. And one of those brands actually approached me because they wanted help with their blog and digital marketing strategy. And they offered me the opportunity to move to New York and work as their director of marketing. And a good point in time for me to take a step back from finance and explore something else that sounded more fun and exciting and honestly just not as stressful as working in finance after the market crash. So I took that opportunity, moved to New York, worked as the director of marketing and digital strategy for e-commerce-based businesses for a few years. So I had my full-time job. I was freelancing on the side, kind of trying to soak in as much knowledge as possible about online marketing. And after a few years, realized that I was tired of working for other people. This is probably a common story, that I just wanted to do my own thing. I wanted the freedom of working for myself. So in fall of 2015, I launched my business, Wonderfell Media. I originally thought that I was going to consult full time. I was going to do marketing consulting for small businesses. And I quickly realized that I kind of hated consulting. I hated the idea of just talking to people all day long. I'm actually really introverted and I just felt very drained by the end of the day. And so I started exploring other income streams that were less kind of me talking full time. So I launched a few online courses. I created some digital products. In summer of 2016, I was sort of tired of doing that and knew that I wanted to create some sort of subscription or membership service that would provide recurring income. With entrepreneurship, a lot of times comes ups and downs in revenue and in income. And I was just like, what can I do? What can I create that will sort of smooth the ups and downs and give me some sort of recurring income that I know that I can rely on?
Right.
And not have to think about, you know, my next launch or where my next client is going to come from. So I went through all of my email opt-in forms. And at the time I had an audience of a few thousand people. And I tried to figure out like, what is it that people are really coming to me for? What do they want advice on? What is it that they want from me? And I was really surprised to see that I had a opt-in of like 10 free stock photos that I had just randomly taken and used as a content upgrade on a blog post that I had written. And I had over 1,000 people download them in like 2 months.
Wow.
And at the time, I wasn't a photographer. I just had taken these photos and I thought it would be like a good free resource to give other people, because I found that a lot of people in my audience were very similar. They're female entrepreneurs trying to build businesses online. They were active on social media. They had blogs, and you need photos for all these things. So I was just giving them some free photos. A lot of people had downloaded them, and I thought, okay, would people pay for this? Like, like obviously people need images. Not everyone can afford to have a photographer or hire a photographer. And I kind of put the idea out there. I pitched the 1,000 people that had downloaded my free photos this idea of a stock photo subscription. Mm-hmm. And I had 72 people sign up in the first 48 hours. So,
okay, wait, let's pause real quick. When you say you pitched it, how did you pitch this idea to them?
Yep. So I literally sent an email with a direct checkout link. That is what I did. I kind of stressed about the idea before I even put it out there, because I thought like, okay, I'm not a photographer. I like want to create this new income stream, but I have no idea if anyone's going to pay me. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a thing where if I want to create a subscription or membership, I need like a new website or at least a sales page, or, you know, I need all these things. And I remember talking to my husband and he was like, take a step back. What do you really actually need? What's like the minimum thing that you need to do this? And I needed photos and I needed a way for people to pay me for them.
Right.
So before I went through and, you know, created a website or a sales page or anything, I literally just sent an email to the 1,000 people who had downloaded my free photos saying, I'm not a photographer, but I would like to take photos from you. My thought is I'm going to do 30 photos a month. You're going to pay me a set fee. And because this is like pre-validating my idea, like I have a special launch offer where you're going to pay like $50 for the whole year.
Mm.
And so I had 72 people in the first 48 hours. And wow. I thought, this is a mistake. Like,
there's a glitch.
Like, this is an accident, right? Like, maybe this was just like too cheap. And so everyone was like, sure, just take my money. And I was like, this isn't real. So I decided to double the price and I made it $100 for the year. And I opened up the offer to the rest of my email list, which at the time was like, I think 3,000 people. And I had another 78 people sign up in the next couple of weeks. So I had 150 people sign up during my like official launch period. And I was like, okay, let's do this. So the Styled Style Society started taking off. I started spending more time trying to improve my photography skills. And around the same time, this is sort of a side note, but one of my other businesses is running an Instagram account and brand for my dog. My dog Mochi has over 100,000 Instagram followers.
Wow.
A dog model, influencer, partners with brands.
A dog model. Oh my gosh. How cool is that?
Yeah. So around the same time, her account was starting to take off. And I realized that if I wanted to get some bigger brand partnership opportunities, I really needed to spend more time working on my photography skills. The Styled Stock Society required working on my photography skills. At the time, I was still creating courses and I had digital products and I was consulting still. And I was just like doing too many things. And I realized that one, I was overwhelmed. I got really burned out. And by the end of 2016, I was like, I can't go on like this anymore. I need to figure out like what I really want to do moving forward. And it was hard for me because I didn't plan to be a photographer. I wasn't professionally trained. I honestly didn't have my own camera when I started my photography business.
Interesting. That's funny.
Borrowed one for my husband. He be a wedding videographer. Mm-hmm. And so he had a professional DSLR camera, but it wasn't mine. Mm-hmm. I had just borrowed it to take photos. And I realized that it was something that I really enjoyed doing. It was something that people were literally paying me for on a regular basis. And right. the only thing that was really holding me back from pursuing that full time was myself. So I decided at the beginning of 2017, I was going to say, okay, let's do this full time and see what happens.
Mm. I love it. I love it. So you basically figured out that there was a need somewhere and then you filled that need, or you started to try and fill that need. You paid attention to what the response was, and then you further filled that need and went full-fledged with it.
Yep. I think that kind of all my business and life shifts have really evolved from finding the intersection of what my audience wants and what makes me happy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you find that you had to make any sacrifices in making any of your switch, pivot, or quits?
Yeah, I think every time I had to think about this for a minute. I think every time I made a pivot, there was actually an income sacrifice when right. I went from working in finance to working in marketing. Mm-hmm. I took a pay cut. And right. I knew that partially because I wanted the opportunity. I had this opportunity to come to New York, and it was something that I had sort of wanted to do for a few years. And, you know, just the opportunity presented itself, and mm-hmm. it was enough money that, you know, I could live. And right. wasn't as much as I was making before. I thought, okay, well, what am I going to do to make up that income? And at the time, it was one of the reasons I started freelancing, because I could take on other projects in my free time and learn about other businesses and marketing other businesses, which I feel like the experience was totally worth it for me, because it gave me the opportunity to learn not just about the e-commerce business that was my full-time job, but also mm-hmm. other small businesses in New York that had very different needs when it came to online marketing. Mm. And honestly, when I quit my day job to focus on launching my business and running it full time, I didn't have a plan for when what I was going to do, which sounds awful coming from someone.
No, I was the same way.
Be a financial planner. Like, I literally used to make financial plans for other people. And right. I tell people, I'm like, oh no, I just kind of quit my job one day. Like, the business was sort of transitioning, and I remember sitting down with my boss, and originally I was going to sit down and sort of talk through a transition plan for me to, I don't know, maybe work part-time or do something where I could spend more time on my business and try to grow that alongside my day job. But it ended up in a conversation where I was just like, you know what? Like, I'm just going to not come back to work. And I have a really great relationship with my old boss. it wasn't, I think, a surprise to him completely, but I just went into it thinking that I'm going to make this work. And I sat down with my husband and I was like, look, I don't really know how this is going to work. I don't really know how people are going to pay me and mm-hmm. how much they're going to pay me, but I'm going to make it work. And I don't want anything to change. You know, you have some expenses and bills that you pay. I have some expenses and bills that I pay. I just want to go on and, like, let's pretend that I didn't leave my job, that, you know, I'm making the same amount of money and I'm going to figure it out.
Wow.
And that, I'm happy to say that, like, I've been able to do that. And I yeah. never was at a point where I had to be like, hey, babe, by the way, I didn't make money this month. So,
right. That's, you know what, I'm glad that you share that, because a lot of people will hear that you're married and the automatic assumption will be, oh, well, she was able to do this because she has a cushion. She has a partner. Mm-hmm. You know, she has someone that's able to finance everything if things don't work out with what she's doing. So I'm glad that you broke it down like that, because that gives a realistic side to how you even approached it. Maybe you didn't have a plan, but you didn't try and escape the responsibilities that were already yours.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think obviously everyone's situation is different. And I, right. you know, I will say that there is some privilege in there. My husband pays my health insurance. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going mm-hmm. to say that there aren't benefits to having him in my life. He's also very good at being a support system and things like that. But when it comes to actual, you know, bills and income, I didn't want that to change. I didn't want right. him to feel like, you know, I'm going to quit my day job and just, you know, float around, which right. I think maybe is what my mom thought that I was doing. She was like, as long as he has a job. And I'm like, no, I have a job also.
Like, she's like, oh, I don't want to hear about that. Never mind that. That is funny. That's definitely funny. Did you have any fears when you sort of made this big decision and you were like, okay, this is what I'm doing? Was there any fear that crept in?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I've always been a planner and I've always been someone who, you know, I actually used to think that I was, before I even worked in marketing, I thought that whatever I was doing, I was going to climb the corporate ladder and, you know, have that corner office. And I don't know why, because now when I think about it, I'm like, I'm much happier sitting in my home office in yoga pants than I am with the idea of like having to wear like real pants every day. But the idea that I was just gonna, you know, figure it out was terrifying. But I think I was just at the point in my life where like I'm also very much a control freak, and I felt like I didn't have as much control over my life. And the company that I was working with, it was great, but I never felt like I was really in charge, even if like I was in charge of maybe a project, but not of like the direction or the vision of the company. And I wanted more control over my life and over the work that I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there anything that you picked up from the marketing space and in fashion or in the finance space that you've been able to transfer over to the work that you're doing now?
Lot of things, most things. I think
really
from working in finance, just having a financial background or business background, I feel like has been really helpful. I think a lot of people start businesses and have no idea what like a P&L sheet is, or, you know, have no idea what to do when it comes to paying taxes. And I had that background from studying business and working in finance. And marketing, I learned kind of everything when it comes to running an online business and marketing it online. I learned how to grow an audience. I learned how to do things I don't even do, like Facebook ads, but kind of all the things that go along with online marketing, I've been able to apply to my own business. And so I wouldn't change my experiences, but it's interesting to see how different what I'm doing now is from where I started.
Absolutely. So you touched on growing an audience, and I want to circle back to that because a lot of people that listen to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast have aspirations of, if not quitting their job, at least creating something on the side similar to what you did that could maybe bring them some joy, some happiness, some fulfillment, and then also some additional income. So what are your tips, or do you have any tips for growing an audience?
So I think the biggest question is what problem are you trying to solve? What are you trying to help people with? And that's kind of the question that helps shape like who your audience even is. Because I obviously have very strong feelings about people going out and trying to sell anything to anyone. It just goes,
tell us your feelings. I want to hear.
I think like anyone who's like worked in marketing, who spent tons of hours really drilling down on things like having a target audience and figuring out what they want, what they need, where do they hang out? You know, what do they like? What do they dislike? What is their demographic info look at? Like any sort of like corporate marketing or even, you know, startup marketing, that's like the focus of the majority of your job. It's not the really fun stuff when it comes to marketing. It's really figuring out your audience so that you can target them. And I just, in anything that I've done for my own business, for other people's businesses, and even for my dog, I think the more specific you can be about who your audience is, who you're actually trying to connect with, the more likely you're going to be successful at actually reaching them. Because if you're trying to talk to everyone, you're probably talking to no one. And people have heard that before, but it's so, 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 so true.
Right. I think that's one of the things, though, that out of a lot of the conversations I have, you know, that's the one thing that I think it is sort of hard to get down to, though. Like, okay, you need to know who your target audience is. You need to know who's listening, who's watching, why they need what you have. But then it's like, once you know who they are,
does that really make it easier to find them? Or does that make it easier to market to them?
Both, I think. I think one of the things that I have found to be helpful for me is that my audience has always been similar to myself. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I can relate to them. And I feel like anytime that, for me, most of my marketing has been focused around content marketing. And I think that content that connects is content that converts. So you have to be able to connect to your audience on some level. So I think for anyone who struggles with figuring out like who their audience even is or should be, take a step back and look at yourself and figure out, you know, you created this thing or you want to offer a product or service to people in the world. Like, who are these people? Why did you create it? Probably because it solved a problem for you or it solved a problem for your mom or someone that you know in real life. Mm-hmm. And I think being able to connect on that really personal level is sort of the most important thing when it comes to figuring out who your audience is.
Right, right. What would have been useful for you to know before embarking on this journey that you're on right now of entrepreneurship?
That everything changes. Maybe the thing. I think that I originally thought I'd get to some point where I'd have everything figured out, or I'd reach this like invisible point where like this is what success is, or this is what you know, my end goal is, and then you'd be there and you'd be happy and you just know everything. And
right.
Like, that's, you know, and life would go on.
Right.
But in reality, I think things are constantly changing. You know, the market's changing, technology's changing. I'm changing as a person. Mm-hmm. And my audience's needs are changing. So where I maybe doing something now and for the next couple of years and I'm happy doing it, I don't think that I'm going to be doing the same thing 10 years from now, to be completely honest.
Right.
And maybe I'm doing something related and maybe I'm still doing it, but I'm doing something else on the side. I don't really know, but I do know that I have to embrace change and I have to be able to pivot and evolve if I want to sustain a business.
Right, right. What's been the most useful piece of advice that you've received thus far in your career or in your life in general?
I would say that having it all figured out isn't a thing. So everyone is figuring it out one step at a time. And I think that's one of the things that when it comes to business and life, I forget. I think at some point I thought that, you know, being an adult meant you knew more than being a kid. So there was like some, you know, magical thing that happened along the way where you just learned like how to adult.
Right.
And I realized that's not a thing. And one of the things that made me, I remember when my older sister, she's 8 years older, she had her first daughter. Mm-hmm. She was older than I am and had more life experience than I am, but we had lived together until like right before she got married. And so like I knew her on a personal level and I knew right. that like she had no idea how to have a baby. And as she was pregnant and then like as her first child was born, like I remember talking to her and she was just like, you know, like I'm reading books, I'm Googling a lot, I'm talking to other people, but like I still feel like I don't know what I'm doing a lot of the time. And it's just, you have to do something and figure it out and hope for the best sometimes.
Right, but right. You're winging it sometimes.
Or a lot of the time. And,
right.
And the same thing, you know, in life and in business, there isn't a manual. And especially when you were an entrepreneur, there's no one to tell me like what my next step is or, you know, what I should be doing other than myself. So just knowing that everyone is figuring out one step at a time. And when you see other people's successes, like, or people who are ahead of you in whatever you're doing, know that like they are taking things one step at a time too. It's not that they have, you know, this like magic that happened to them that allowed them to get to where they are today. It was, you know, one step at a time, learning, doing, pivoting.
Right, right. Do you have any routines or practices that help you maybe prepare to be at your best or operate at your maximum capacity daily?
Yes.
Oh, that sounds like yes. I'm going to tell you my secrets.
Okay. So I think if there's anything that really drives what I do and what I don't do, it's the idea that do more of what works and less of what doesn't. So I spent a lot of time figuring out what my priorities are and what's really working for me in my life and what's really working for me in my business. And so I have basically, over the last 6 months, created a system that works for me and drives everything that I do from a business standpoint and also my life. So I work 3 weeks a month. I've intentionally structured it so that I have a week of no work time. Because I am actually the type of person who would work all the time if left to my own devices. And I also know that for me to work my best when it comes to creating content, to finding inspiration, and really being productive when I am working, I need time away from my work. I need to step back. I need to actually live my life. And I want to live my life like that. I didn't start my business so I could work more.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
That makes sense. But for me, I have to have that time off structured because otherwise I won't take it. I'll just keep working and keep working and say like maybe someday. And so I've created a system where I work 3 weeks and then I don't work for a week and then it repeats itself. And I may take a longer break in the summer or around the holidays, but it's sort of like this is a system that works for me. And those 3 weeks are very, very specific and structured within themselves. So I have a CEO week where I am working on all things systems and strategies. I'm planning my shoots for the month. I'm planning my content. I am, you know, doing my like big team meetings. I'm looking over all my like reports and analytics and accounting, and it's all the big picture CEO work all for 1 week. That's all I do. And then I have 1 week that's like my content creation week. So I am styling and shooting and editing all the photos for the Style Stock Society, for my clients, sometimes for my dog. It's content week. And that's like the only thing that I'm focused on that week. So I'm not, you know, looking at my reports or doing marketing. I'm just focused on content creation. And then my third week is my marketing week. So that is all things marketing, whether it's planning my social media, blog posts, any other sort of things that I'm doing. It's when I schedule all of my podcast interviews to batch during my marketing week. So there's just 1 week a month where I'm working on all the marketing for my business. And for me, this has really forced me to create time boundaries around things. So instead of saying like, you know, I'd like to do this new marketing thing, but I'm just going to fit it in my schedule whenever. It's like, no, this is the week that it's happening and it's going to happen, you know, start to finish that week and that's it. That's the time. And I feel like that has helped me so much with just being productive. Cause I think that when you give yourself a set amount of time to do something, you're going to do it faster than when you just like say like, oh, I'm going to do that this week.
Right. That's true. Like sort of knowing that that deadline is there makes you, it kind of puts that fire under you. Like, okay, you said you were going to get this done, so get it done, as opposed to just being like, yeah, at some point, I'll get to it, you know, and then it just never happens. Next week. I mean, I like this system that you have going on. I might try it myself because I do find that, you know, there's so much required of you and, you know, it's easy to be pulled all over the place. One thing that I do by myself sort of reining in on or pulling back on is like, okay, my email inbox is not going to run my day. And it's easy to allow that to happen because things come in, then you're trying to address those things or you're trying, and then next thing you know, half the day is gone and you haven't done anything that was actually on your to-do list. It's just like dealing with what's in your inbox. So I like this idea that you've come up with, and I might go ahead and try that and implement that. I'll have to let you know how that works out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, email is definitely something that I have found to be an issue in my life. I'm either the type of person who responds like right away or like 10 weeks from now. And so yeah. I often try to, you know, not, I check first thing in the morning just to make sure there's no like emergencies, but then I try to not answer emails throughout the day and then just look around like 4:35 late in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. I'll answer emails for like a set period of time, like half an hour, hour, depending on, you know, the week. But I know some people, because I've gotten their autoresponders, who literally, you know, I'll send them an email and I'll get a reply saying, hey, thanks for your email. I only reply on Fridays.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, good for you.
Mm-hmm. Like, Yeah. You know what? It's funny too, because I think it's a good thing, but at the same time, coming from, and this is where I guess like old habits die hard, coming from a business environment where that was absolutely unacceptable. It does give me a little bit of anxiety, and a part of me feels like, okay, so then what happens if there's something serious going on? Or what if there's a, look, I know we're not curing cancer here. I know, I get it, you know, but at the same time, I don't know. I feel like I would just have a little bit of anxiety with all these things sort of like piled up that are going to require my attention at some point, whether it's just responding to an email or actually having to take some action from it. I don't know. I guess you just have to do what works for you though, and your personality type.
Right. Yeah. I feel the same way to an extent. When I have my like off week every month, I do set up an autoresponder and, mm-hmm. you know, I basically say, if it's not urgent, I'll get back to you when I'm back in the office. But yeah. I still find myself like, you know, needing to check my email and make sure that like there isn't anything urgent.
Okay, so when you encounter those challenging days that make you sort of like maybe struggle to keep your head up or to move forward, that's if you encounter those days. What are some of the things that you find yourself doing to keep yourself going?
So I think that probably happens from time to time. I think the biggest thing that I do is when I'm like really freaking feeling like I'm on the struggle bus. Like I just can't mm-hmm. do it today. I don't. I feel like I'm at the point where I walk away and like don't force it to happen. And obviously you can't do that
right
all the time. And sometimes maybe you have a deadline or you have something that makes you feel like you need to do something as opposed to just like taking some time for yourself to walk away and feel refreshed and not do the thing that you don't want to do. But mm-hmm. as much as possible, I try to figure out how to do the things that bring me joy, that I enjoy doing, but also that help move my business forward, mm-hmm. and not do all the things that don't fall in that category. So right. I'm a big believer in automating things that I don't want to be doing, and outsourcing things that I don't want to be doing, and then just batching the things that I am doing so that if there are things that like are frustrating or annoying, I know that like I'm just going to do it and get it over with and then move on to the next thing and it'll be better.
Right. So to give everyone listening a realistic example of maybe something that you outsource or something that you automate, can you share with us maybe what one of those things would be for each category?
Sure. So I outsource a whole ton of different things.
Really? Okay.
So I have a virtual assistant who I outsource my like content marketing work to. Mm-hmm. She schedules social media posts for me. She creates marketing graphics. She formats my blog posts. Well, so actually I have a copywriter who writes my blog posts, and then my assistant will take them, upload them, format them, check them for SEO, add the blog post graphics, and schedule it. So I'm not really touching any of that. Mm-hmm. And I have a PR strategist who helps me with outreach and kind of that type of marketing. I have a production assistant that helps me with things when it comes to shoots, like setting up, dealing with props, and like logistics. And I have a membership coordinator who handles all my support emails for my membership. So awesome. I have a lot of people helping me with a lot of different things. And obviously that didn't happen overnight. This right. sort of been a progression of hiring more people, over the past 2 years or so. Mm-hmm. But it's made a huge difference in my sanity. And mm-hmm. I think that any time that you have the funds to invest, I'm not telling anyone to outsource things when they can't afford it.
Right.
But if you have the funds to invest in people, that has been one of the best investments that I've made in my business, because there are things that I can do everything that everyone's doing on my team. Mm-hmm. I like haven't actually outsourced anything that I can't do myself. But mm-hmm. there are things that I hate doing that other people can do better.
Right.
There are things that I hate doing that people can do faster. Mm-hmm. So where something might take me 2 or 3 hours because I hate doing it, it takes my assistant 45 minutes to do it because she doesn't hate doing it. And mm-hmm. then I just have to pay her for her time, which right. makes complete sense from a profit standpoint. And there's just a lot of things in my business that don't need my attention too. So, you know, when it comes to automating, that's like another part that is easy to give me back more of my own time. Mm-hmm. My virtual assistant actually schedules social media, but one of the tools that I use, SmarterQ, is a social media scheduler that actually has the ability to reshare evergreen content. So instead of just scheduling something to be shared one time, it goes into a library of social posts and it gets shared over and over and over again. And, you know, when you think about it, your audience is only seeing a very small fraction of what you're
right,
sharing on social
media. Right.
So the idea that, you know, I might share a blog post today and then share it again in a month or 10 months, like it's not that it's repetitive or, mm-hmm. You know, there's people who are going to see it that didn't see it the first time. And there's people who maybe saw it the first time and don't remember, or they need to see it again and again to even get the message.
Yeah.
Or, things like that. So that's I true. Think that mm-hmm. for things like that, that can be easily automated with technology, it's just a no-brainer to embrace those tools and use them.
Absolutely. Now what's the name of that program again? Just so that everybody knows, because they probably didn't know what it was. And now they're like, oh, yes, I need this. What's the name of the program?
Yep. SmarterQ, like Q.
SmarterQ.
UE.
Awesome. That seems like a lifesaver right there.
It is. And it's like less than $20 a month that awesome. You can essentially run, you know, the majority of your social media on autopilot. You just put in like the new posts. If I have a new blog post or a new thing that I want to promote, we'll add them to the queue, but then it just does its work and shares on autopilot for you.
Right. So you don't have to sit there and schedule things out in advance to say, okay, in 2 months, I want them to see this again or what or not. That, like, that's perfect. I love that. That was smart of them to come up with that idea.
It really was.
Yeah, absolutely. So was there ever a time where you thought to yourself, you know what? I really need to step it up. And if so, what did you do?
So I probably think that once a week, to be completely honest.
I am
the type of person who's sort of never satisfied.
Okay.
So I always think that I could be doing more. I could be growing more. I could be better. I could be helping more people. I could be making more money. Mm-hmm. And on one hand, it's great because it keeps me I'm very self-motivated. I don't mm-hmm. need outside forces to motivate me to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, it's sort of a curse in that I'm never satisfied. And there's always like a little bit of anxiety around, am I doing enough?
Right. And
the answer, like it's not really a question or an answer, but what I've come to learn is that there isn't some point where I'm going to be doing enough when it comes to how I feel. Mm. I'm always going to feel like I could do more. So I can't let that feeling dictate how I feel about myself or my business, because right. there's always room to grow. I'm never going to get to the point where I'm like, okay, this is it. Like, I learned everything there is to know, or I've made all the money in the world.
Yeah.
All I can do is take things one step at a time and just do, you know, one more thing every day or every week to grow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you made any missteps that you later realized to be a good learning lesson for yourself or for your business?
So there's nothing that I regret. I do think that there are a few things that I wish I had done sooner. And I think one thing that comes to mind when it comes to the Styled Stock Society. So I mentioned earlier, when I launched it, I didn't have a website or really a plan for mm-hmm. what was going to happen as it grew. And once I got my initial members, I decided that I was going to run the subscription using, now I can't even, SendOwl, I think is the name of it.
Okay.
Because they had some sort of like subscription payment system where I could set it up so people could pay on a subscription basis. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I honestly, this is in part because I didn't think this was going to end up being a full-time business. I thought it was just like an additional income stream. I wasn't really thinking down the line, like, what if this grows? But mm-hmm. I outgrew SendOwl within like 6 months. And I realized that if I really wanted to grow and scale my business, that I needed to find a tool that would allow me to do that. So I ended up actually creating a whole separate membership site on WordPress using a membership plugin that was really built for what I wanted it to do. But I didn't think about that when I first started. And, you know, on one hand, I'm glad that I got started and I just did it and I put it out there and I figured out something that would work in the meantime. Mm-hmm. But I probably would have saved myself a lot of stress and hours if I had kind of had the thought to think longer term, because what I ended up having to do was manually migrate like 500 people from one system to the other, which was kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, kind of sounds like it, just a little bit.
Yeah, it was. And I had people on like all sorts of different plans, and it wasn't just like I could, you know, press a button and have them appear in the new system. It was like a lot of spreadsheets and emails and trying to figure out like how to set this up. And if I had just done it from the beginning, then mm-hmm. it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. But I mean, in the end, like, I'm glad that I put it out there and I'm glad that I had a temporary solution, even if it had to evolve into something different.
Right. Absolutely. So when we think about the personal side of things, we know that you work a lot, but we also know that you take that week off. When you have your personal time, do you have any like personal care indulgences or a personal care, maybe like routine that you do that sort of like rejuvenates you or makes you feel like, okay, now I can take on the world again?
Not really a routine. I mean, the week off actually evolved from, I realized that in August of last year, I had the opportunity to travel to Puerto Rico for a brand collaboration with my dog. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to go. And at the time, I had things in my calendar and I knew that like I could get the work done. I just needed to be more efficient, more productive, and do the work in less time to be able to give myself that time off. And mm-hmm. that's sort of when I started structuring my like 3 weeks on, 1 week off. And I realized that, you know, I had this trip come up in August and then I was also traveling. I was traveling to Cape Cod in California in September. I was traveling to Aruba in October. And then I was traveling to California and Tennessee for the holidays in November and December. And I was like, I basically have a trip planned every month. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to do this. And one of, you know, I kind of thought back to when I first started my business and I was just like playing the like, you know, what would my ideal life look like game?
And yeah.
I always wanted to be able to travel. And I actually thought back in the day that that meant like I wanted to be able to run my business from anywhere, like travel. So like I could, you know, be on the beach in Bali on my laptop. So one, I think that's overrated. No one actually wants to work. When you're at the beach, you don't want to be working.
Yeah, so, you want to hang out. You want to enjoy yourself. Yeah.
So I built my business intentionally so that I can take that week and go to the beach and not do anything. Mm-hmm. I can, you know, sit on the beach and do nothing or read 10 books or go to the spa, whatever it is that I feel like doing. I honestly don't really have much of a routine around that other than I try to, like the one thing I try to do every month, usually during my like off week, is have an in-person coffee date with someone. And that okay. sounds like such a silly thing to kind of prioritize or like have no. to say, oh, I'm doing this. But you know, you work from home and you don't see a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. And no, that's, I think that's perfectly reasonable.
And I'm, you know, I'm not the best at making myself leave and interact with other people and stay in touch with people who, you know, I don't have a reason to see all the time. So mm-hmm. It's one of the things that I felt like I need to do on a personal level, but it also helps me. I think a lot of the times in a business perspective, because a lot of the people that I end up having coffee dates with or going to lunch with are other people who are either business owners or want to be business owners. And it's just like yeah. interesting to, you know, catch up and see what other people are doing. So,
Right. So at this point, what does success mean or look like for you?
I think that success for me, and this like sounds really selfish, but like it's loving what I do and making more than enough money to sustain the life I want to live. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, my vision of the life I want to live is constantly evolving.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, I want 2.5 kids in a house in the suburbs. you know, right now the life I want to live is based in New York and it's really expensive. And mm-hmm. you know, I want to be able to have a real home office space that I can work out of. So I'm not in the corner of my bedroom like I was for the beginning of my business.
Right.
I want to be able to go try new restaurants and not think about like, can I afford, you know, a fancy dinner or, mm-hmm. you know, being able to travel once a month even. So I think that is evolving. And maybe in the future, I want to travel all the time, or maybe I'll want to adopt 10 dogs. I don't really know, but right. I want to have a business that allows me the freedom to sustain the life that I want to live.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Elle. Like this has been a great conversation. And for everyone who's not familiar and hasn't dropped into any of your beautiful websites, make sure to let them know how they can find you, how they can maybe sign up for some of your membership services, and how they can just keep in touch with you.
Sure. So I am online at eldruin.com. That's eldruin.com. Mm-hmm. And on all social media as at eldruin. And the Styled Stock Society is at styledstocksociety.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for spending time with us. I really appreciate it. This was a fun conversation for sure.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. And as always, you guys keep killing it.
If you head over to switchpivotorquit.com, you will see that Pick My Brain sessions are now available with me, your chief encourager, Ayana Angel. They are one-on-one 60-minute sessions that are a hybrid of consulting and coaching. That is where you will get the best out of me. We can talk everything from digital marketing to podcast development to podcast growth, social media strategy, book publishing, marketing and promotions, DIY publicity, pitching, planning, execution, anything that you are thinking, hey, I could really use somebody to bounce these ideas off of and some expert advice in terms of what direction I should go in, what would potentially work, what might not work. I have an idea, but I'm not really sure about how it will pan out. Go ahead and book your 60-minute Pick My Brain session with me now.